The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Solnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we're going to answer some listener emails that we've gotten. We actually have a couple today on, I think we're going to start out with a couple on SPIAs, single premium immediate annuities. So we just happen to have a couple of emails kicking around on that topic, so I hope this would be a good day to do it. So thanks everybody for joining us on as we record. This turns out to be a rare gloomy day in Colorado. Started out beautiful this morning, but something moved in, and now it's like 60 degrees and cloudy and sprinkling already, and I wore shorts, and I'm now regretting it. So,
you do have shorts on,
I do, and I have, actually, for the first time in my life, I own a pair of sandals. I've never owned a pair of sandals in my entire life.
In your entire life?
Well, as a baby, as a child running around, I'm sure I had some, but as a fully formed adult who buys their own shoes, I have never bought a pair of sandals, actually, and they're not too bad. They're pretty comfy. I'm breaking them in, getting ready for my trip, so that's why I'm wearing them today. They're new.
I think those are called fisherman sandals.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm not going fishing, though. I'm walking around. I think these are walking sandals. I know the fisherman ones you're talking about, because I bought some for my daughter, and they called them fisherman sandals for some interesting reason, but maybe that they're waterproof. I don't know. They didn't seem like you'd have an advantage in your fish catching by wearing them. So I'm not quite sure. Maybe they're non-slip soles or something to keep you on the boat. I'm not sure where the fisherman part comes in. But
I think it goes all the way back to the time of Jesus.
I think his were open-toed, though, weren't they?
Well, I don't know. Nobody was there. Nobody really saw what the man was wearing.
Well, some people were there, but I haven't talked to any of them. So
some people were there when Jesus was around?
Yeah, he wasn't the only person on the planet at the time.
Well, you said you haven't talked to him as if you could if you wanted to.
Well, not now. But.
Okay.
So all right. Was I correct in saying we've got a couple SPIA thingamajigger?
We do. We have SPIA issues and emails and something I want to explain to our iTunians, because we don't know. We don't know what show iTunians are listening to. Things are getting out of whack with the iTunes broadcast. Today is...
the radio show listeners are in.
Yeah, the local Colorado mm-hmm. Greeley listeners, you guys are all set, although you would probably be expecting our local listeners today to be hearing part 2 of our show on fixed indexed annuities.
Well, part 3.
It would technically be part 3, but this coming Saturday, when I think this show is actually going to play, I personally think this show is going to play on, what is it, May 20th is this Saturday?
Well, this show on the radio is going to play June 3rd, almost for sure.
No, it's going to play May 20th. I beg to differ. We have no show for this coming Saturday, May 20th.
For the radio, I think we do.
But not for iTunes.
Correct.
And I have to get something on iTunes.
Right. You're talking, you address the radio listeners.
It doesn't matter whether you are an iTunian or whether you are a Northern Colorado listener. This is the show you will hear this Saturday. We're not going to have one playing on iTunes and one playing on the radio. So what we did, Chris is leaving for Arizona, I was going to say. You're leaving for another hot place, Vietnam. Totally. Way on the other side of the earth.
That's a bit different. And a different kind of heat.
Different, yes, a humid heat. Yeah. Chris is leaving for Vietnam in a couple of weeks. Listeners on iTunes and local listeners will know Chris is a finance instructor at Colorado State University, and they have some sort of arrangement with a university in Vietnam. We'll let Chris talk about it. When he comes back in a month, he's going to have a lot of good stories to tell us about Vietnam, and he's going to tell us about their retirement system. I think that'll be a good show to get a little bit of information on what the Vietnamese do to fund their retirements. But anyways, Chris is leaving, so we are in a bind, and we have to get a bunch of shows recorded before Chris leaves because no one else in the office knows how to use the recording software.
Just to be clear, there is someone who can record these for you. You just don't want to drive over there and do it.
We could drive to Greeley if push came to shove, yeah. And Micah, who's a software engineer or a what do they call it, a radio engineer?
He's a producer.
Producer, mm-hmm. Whatever, producing engineer. He's brilliant, and he can do all that for us, mm-hmm. if he had to. But I suppose we could drive to Greeley in a push-comes-to-shove situation.
And go live. And take calls.
We could go live. Actually, Pete sent me a voicemail. He called me. He's back. He's out for a week. Then he's gone for a week. No, he's only home for a few days. Then he's gone this weekend, and he's gone for another week. Then he'll be back, and he said he'll be ready to retire from his retirement. But he could possibly do something with me if I had to. But that said, what we had done was last week, last Tuesday, because today is Tuesday the 16th. That's usually when Chris and I record our shows. Last Tuesday the 9th, Chris and I recorded the shows to play on the 13th and 20th of May. They would play live first in Northern Colorado, as they always do, and then they would appear on iTunes. Today is the 16th, and nothing has appeared on iTunes yet. And the reason is we received an email from our compliance official that they did not want us to play those shows on iTunes because we talked about indexed annuities. And there's nothing wrong with talking about indexed annuities. They're an insurance product. They're regulated by all 50 state insurance departments. That's how insurance is regulated. They're regulated at the state level. They are not regulated by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, nor are they regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. In fact, we even talked about that on the show that no one has heard yet except for in Northern Colorado because the SEC did try to regulate fixed indexed annuities. And in Dodd-Frank, the Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa inserted amendment mm-hmm. to the law that permanently banned the SEC from regulating fixed indexed annuities. So anyways, these products, there's nothing wrong with these products, folks.
Nor did we say anything inappropriate
right.
about
no.
them.
No. We, in fact, I tried to take a very agnostic, impartial approach. We bemoaned and bashed the people who love these and think they're the best thing in the world, and we bemoaned and bashed the people who hate them and think they should be vilified and ignored. The truth lies somewhere in between. And we try to teach people about them, how they work, when would you want one, when wouldn't you want one. And you even said, Chris, it was a really good show in your opinion because you learned things. You don't work with these all the time. So I thought overall we did an okay job. Well, lo and behold, longtime listeners will know, I have a unique business model. I charge actually charge for financial planning advice. Go figure, right, Chris? Mm-hmm. We don't, we're not investment advisors per se. We offer investment advisory services. We do help people manage their assets. We have a chartered financial analyst who works for us, mm-hmm. who does all the due diligence on our portfolios, monitors them, benchmarks them. We offer all that. We mm-hmm. have it all. But unique to us, you need not bring money over to us. You don't have to have a minimum net worth to hire us for a retirement analysis, because we actually charge separately a flat dollar, pre-negotiated, pre-agreed upon fee for service to run a retirement plan. Mm-hmm. And I do that specifically, folks, because I don't want, you gave the best analogy once, the old cell phone bills. Remember that? You talked about...
I'm getting old now, so... asking me to recall things from the past is a little...
It was like 5 weeks
risky.
Ago.
I know. It's crazy.
You're the one who gave the analogy, because I do a la carte pricing.
Yeah, they used to be... Cell phones used to bundle,
right,
where you had to do one thing, you know, contract for service, then they'd subsidize the other thing, but you never really knew exactly what you were paying for the phone. It was hidden from you, built into the fees they were charging you for the service, and now we're seeing that industry evolve away from that, kind of like we see the financial industry, the financial advice industry, evolving away from that, where...
Oh, it's evolving, kicking and screaming.
True, though. True. But, well, the cell phones resisted for a long time, too, those companies. And so, yeah, we're splitting it apart so you can clearly see what you're getting for what,
and what, you
what
pay
you're
for.
Paying for, and
exactly.
only pay for what you're looking for instead
and what
of
you need.
Paying a whole bunch of stuff that some of you may not want or need, that kind of thing. So just a lot more transparent and obvious and...
And
fair.
That, folks, is why I structured my particular business that way. And what I wanted to do is charge for financial planning advice and charge for asset management, two separate fees. Mm-hmm. By separating them, those who only want asset management can get it at far lower rates than the industry's 1.5%, 2% of AUM, because we're not rolling anything into it. You want investment advice? You buy investment advice. You want financial planning? You buy financial planning. So we priced our model that way specifically, unlike the majority of advisors who say, I'm not going to work with you if you don't have at least $500,000 or $1 million of assets. And then if you want to work with me, you give me your assets, and I'm going to charge you 1.5% on those. And, oh, I'll give you a free financial plan with that.
Yeah, but the thing is there, the one thing you have to really watch out for if you're under a model like that, they're collecting from you that agreed upon AUM fee regardless of what they hand you back. So they have every incentive to give you as little as they have to keep you happy. That's the defect in that model, in my opinion. You're paying for them managing your assets, and then they, to sweeten the deal, they say, oh, we're going to give you all these other things. We're not going to charge you for it. Well, when they're sitting down thinking about how hard they want to work on a retirement plan for you or something like that, it's very tempting to try to do it as efficiently, you know, as least time-consuming and effort possible, so you can spend more time on the golf course. And that's, you know, counter to the client's best interest, in my opinion. Whereas if you're paying for it separately, you've got to justify, okay, this is what I gave you for X amount of dollars, and I've got to make sure that I'm handing them something that they find of value for what they ended up paying for this little piece, the retirement plan or the annuity analysis or the Social Security maximization, or, you know, on and on and on, all the different things that you might hire a financial advisor or planner to do. That's the real, one of the underlying troubles with the AUM model, is that all the extra stuff they claim to be giving you, it's hard to quantify, it's hard to know if you're getting good value, and they want it that way. They want it cloudy and smoky and untransparent so that they can continue to overcharge you, essentially.
And we'll talk about that maybe in one of these next shows we're recording, because I want to go down that rabbit hole. I want to share with our listeners something that happened to me, Chris, an exchange between me, usually humble and quiet, excuse me?
Sorry, I had something in my throat.
An exchange between me and one of the software vendors at the recently attended Retirement Income Summit.
Oh.
It was...
Those are usually pleasant meetings to
if
watch.
If he could have hit me, I think he would have.
Oh.
Yeah, I think.
You and probably challenged his underlying model.
I did.
Yeah.
And at the end, I realized I was probably a little too hard on him. I actually felt bad.
Well, he's trying to feed his wife and kids.
But I'll talk about that because it hits upon exactly what you just said. Mm-hmm. And we didn't plan on talking about that. And if you know me, if I go down this rabbit hole, the whole show will be on that.
Sure.
I want to come back to what's happening. Mm-hmm. So back to our model. So I always wanted, folks, this model where we would sell or offer to our clients whatever product or service they needed and allow our clients to say, I don't need asset management, but I would like, Jim, for you to help me with my retirement plan. Or people would say, I would like you to help me with my asset management, but I think my retirement is on track, or whatever the individual may need. Gee, Jim, can you give us some tax planning advice on this topic? Or can you help us with an inherited retirement account I just got from a non-spousal beneficiary or a non-spousal owner of that account? I was a non-spousal beneficiary. Absolutely. We can help with whatever people need. We charge just for our time, and we just feel that being as clear as possible benefits our clients. That's how we do things.
And we generally undercharge for our time.
Probably. That's
makes the model even more attractive for people
out there. Let me just say on that vein, Tina and Diane have been preaching to me about that. Diane is my CPA. Tina is the bookkeeper. Yeah, they say if I don't start charging more, I'm not saying we're going to go under. We're no way near that. But she's like, Jesus, Jim, your profitability could be a lot better. Yeah, I know I don't charge enough. But you've been telling me that for the 9 years you've been working with me.
True story.
That is true. That, folks, that is 100% true. I think Chris's first week in the office, when I told you what I charge for these plans, you looked at me like I had four heads. And slowly I've been trying to raise the prices. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I probably charge way too little, especially compared
for
to
certain
what
things,
other mm-hmm. people
I
charge.
Agree.
Okay, so anyways, back to another thing.
Yep.
So what I did with my practice is I started a registered investment advisory firm. I'm registered with the state of Colorado. This is relatively new. I only did that about 3 years ago. Prior to having my own registered investment advisory firm, I worked... you're not affiliated, so I don't want to use that word, but you kind of use the services of a what we call corporate RIA or broker dealer. We talked about the difference between a broker dealer and a registered investment advisor, a registered rep and an investment advisor representative. We talked about those differences on previous shows. So I used to use one corporate one for a decade. And the advantages, folks, if anybody, we know we have a lot of industry people listening to us. One of the things we do, especially if you're new in the industry, the reason I went down that route is it's all all the services, Chris, are provided. They take a portion of my pay, so whatever I charge someone, they would take a portion of that, mm-hmm. and it varies how much they would take. And in exchange, they provide my compliance, my due diligence. They provide the platform for investments. They do the reporting software. That
archiving.
Archiving, email archiving. All the things that we have to do, all the rules we have to follow, all the services we have to offer, they offer them to our clients. The trade-off with using a corporate, though, is you got to play by their rules, and they all set different rules. Well, I recently moved from my first corporate RIA, for lack of a better term. I don't want to name who they were. I moved from them to Cambridge, our current one. Cambridge Investment Research is our current corporate, and they're very nice. I moved to them actually because their tagline used to be called the Fee Experts, and they were their niche in the financial planning world was to work with advisors who want to charge fees and not necessarily commissions. Because mm-hmm. years ago, everything was commissions, as you know. Mm-hmm. So the ability to charge fees was radical at the time. No one did. Everybody charged commissions, a sales commission. You put money in, you got to give a certain percentage of that to the person helping you. And that was called a commission. And Cambridge kind of developed a model that would allow you more to charge fees. And that's what attracted me to Cambridge. So I changed and I went to Cambridge and kept the corporate. A couple of years ago, though, I had a falling out with Cambridge over a few things, and I said, you know what? I'm taking financial planning itself, my actual retirement plans, and I'm bringing that, Chris, in-house. And I created a registered investment advisory firm named Jim Saulnier and Associates. It's registered with the state of Colorado. It does not manage assets. Jim Saulnier and Associates is a registered investment advisor for giving financial planning advice. So I'm registered, and if you read my, it's called Form ADV. If you read my ADV, we disclose that, and we say we provide retirement planning services and advice. And we list all our services, we list the advice we provide, and we charge clients a flat fee for that. And that's all we do. You don't have to manage money with us. You don't have to purchase anything. And our disclosure documents say that. That's all we do. You do not have to use us for anything else. You can do everything else wherever you want. And that has been working great. And I kept Cambridge for managing assets. Because in order for me to bring the asset management in-house into my RIA, which I could, mm-hmm. I would then have to go out and on my own negotiate custodial agreements. I would have to get reporting software. I would have to get the compliance software you were talking about with retention, email retention. I would have to provide all the performance reporting, all the statements. All there's just a lot of work you have to do, and it takes me away from doing what I love, which is helping people plan for their retirement. So I decided to maintain a relationship with Cambridge to offer all of those ancillary services to those clients who chose to use us for those services. Mm-hmm. And everything is fine. But one of the things when you use a corporate company like that is they're much bigger than you. Cambridge is a huge company. And they're a great company. Don't get me wrong. I really like them. I disagree with some of their decisions, but I like them. And one of their decisions is when you join, you know, you're signing this 80-page document. I don't know how many pages it was. And you read, and I did read it all. And buried in there is verbiage similar to whatever we say you got to follow. We right. make the rules.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're signing away your rules. There's no negotiation here. We make the rules. There's no negotiation. You don't like it, leave. It's as easy as that. So what had happened is, you know, for the past, since 2012 I've been with Cambridge, they've been wonderful with the radio show. They really have. We joke about them. They have one little issue. At least at the time, we thought there was one little issue. They don't want us talking about those mortgages only available to people over the age of 62. You remember that?
I do.
So they don't even want us saying the name of them. Even though lately we talked about Wade Fow and Texas Tech University and Michael Fink and all the wonderful work they're doing on researching these mortgages only available to those over the age of 62, which has caused us, Chris, to reverse our thinking of those mortgages.
Sure, we weren't as attracted to them as we are now for
Correct.
Certain clients.
We totally reversed with these mortgages.
Correct.
And we can't talk about them. That's fine, so we won't talk about them. But what I did last week is record two shows on indexed annuities, otherwise used formerly known as equity indexed annuities, only to find out from Cambridge those annuities are also, it's part of like George Collins' seven dirty words. They also don't want us talking about those. They have no problem with me offering them to clients. Just don't talk about them. And they have,
this is where we enter bizarro world.
This is bizarro world. So I have been emailing them saying, huh, are you serious? Pointing out to them that even FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, much bigger than Cambridge, affectionately referred to by me as the evil empire, FINRA, who controls registered reps, and also regulates variable annuities for years, Chris, wouldn't let registered reps actually teach people about variable annuities. And we never could until about a month ago when FINRA released a finding that they said essentially, wow, it kind of dawned on us. Teaching people about variable annuities is a good thing because people don't understand how they work.
And they won't get sucked into something they shouldn't be buying.
So FINRA actually lets us talk about variable annuities now and teach people about them. Well, Cambridge has not woken up to the 21st century and doesn't want us doing that. So when we come back, I will explain this a little bit more, but we do have two email questions on an annuity we can talk about, a single premium immediate annuity, which is an annuity we've talked about in the past, but these people in these emails ask some very good questions about them. So we're not going to be able to talk about equity indexed annuities, but I will be able to answer these questions on single premium immediate annuities.
Perfect. So when we come back, we'll hear a top song from 1935 as we look back to the year Social Security was started.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
The weather is frightening, the thunder and lightning seem to be having their way. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. The turn in the weather will keep us together, so I can honestly say.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is one of the top songs from 1935 as we look back to the year that Social Security was started. That, of course, is Fred Astaire singing Isn't This a Lovely Day from Top Hat, the movie Top Hat. He's in that movie with Ginger Rogers, among many others. So back to our... Actually, I don't think we're quite to the SPIA email, but the single premium immediate annuities are coming up shortly. But maybe you can finish your conversation on we can't continue to talk about indexed annuities, at least for now.
Well, at least for now. So what had happened is Chris and I then, as I explained, recorded two shows on indexed annuities, fixed indexed annuities.
Not pitching them or selling them, just like we talk about other
Just like
things.
We did on the QLEX.
Yeah, we weren't. It's just an educational show. It talks about how they worked and what the features and variations might be between different policies, policy features you might run into, explained how they worked, that kind of thing, purely for educational purposes.
Absolutely. We just, the pros and cons. So anyways, we did the show. We didn't set out to do two shows on it, which was going to be three shows. Today we were going to record the third show. We didn't set out to specifically do this. It just kind of happened. Chris kind of personally, between you and me listeners, Chris just kind of gets going sometimes and doesn't shut up. And before you know it, three shows later, some topic's been covered.
Like QLEX.
Yeah, like QLEX, that QLEX issue. Those QLEX shows are like our most famous shows.
Whatever.
But we started with two shows, and I was going to do a third show on indexed annuities today. And iTunians, you would have had a show playing on the 13th of May. It would have been Equity Indexed Annuities Part 1. But as I've said before, we have to have our compliance people, which is through Cambridge, the corporate RIA, Registered Investment Advisor, that I use to do a lot of my back office work for our asset management services here at Jim Salinger Associates. And I explained how Jim Salinger Associates itself is a Colorado Registered Investment Advisor, specifically to give retirement planning advice to people concerned about retirement who want to save for their retirement and just pay a fee, not have us manage money, not have to buy anything from us, just help me plan for my retirement. And that's what Chris and I's business model is, and that we use Cambridge to help us manage money for the efficiency of scale of having a much larger, Chris, registered investment advisory firm negotiating with our software providers, our reporting software, our due diligence, all that kind of stuff. Well, part of the agreement of working with Cambridge is to let them do our compliance work. That's part of what we have to do, and I have no problem with it. And they have a right in the agreement I signed with them to say yay or nay to anything I do, especially with advertising. And again, I've never had a problem with that in 17 years of this business model. I say, okay, no problem. Until Chris and I actually recorded a series of shows on equity indexed annuities. When I came into the office on Monday of this week, I had an email from our lovely compliance person who actually likes our show. And I don't fault her at all. She only follows the rules. And it was pretty much, hey, Jim, I noticed that she said, I haven't listened to your shows yet, but I saw what you titled them. You titled them Equity Annuities, Equity Indexed Annuities, Part 1 and 2. And she said, Cambridge has a rule. We don't want people who are using Cambridge to talk about equity indexed annuities. And then, boom, then you hit the bureaucracy. You know, can someone please explain to me why this stupid rule exists? And I have yet to get an answer. I've just been told they don't want us talking about them. They have no problem with me offering them. They have no problem with that at all. Just don't talk about them.
Hmm. Even if we whisper.
I don't know if we can whisper about them. How about Pig Latin? Maybe they won't know what we're saying.
Could be. Maybe when I come back, I can speak Vietnamese.
Yeah, do an equity annuity show in Vietnamese. She'll have no idea what we're talking about. But they haven't given me an answer yet on why. So I sent them a regular terse email asking for an explanation, Chris, and pointing out to them the absurdity of their rule, because even FINRA, you know, who I graciously call the evil empire, has come to the conclusion that their old rule on keeping registered representatives, because FINRA controls variable annuity sales, whereas fixed annuity sales are by state insurance regulators, FINRA realized, gee, our rule that we don't want our registered reps actually teaching people about these products is pretty stupid. It's essentially what FINRA was saying. And the need for greater education is there. So we can actually teach people now about variable annuities, which we never could. The reason I did shows on equity indexed annuities is we got an email question on them. And I thought, well, we've never really talked about them. Let's do a show on them, which turned into one show and was going to turn into three shows. And now I don't know if we're going to be able to talk at all about them.
So we're going to talk about the safe thing.
We can talk about single premium immediate annuities. So I want to apologize to our iTunians on why no show appeared on the 13th. There will be a show on the 20th, most likely this one.
Well, by the time you hear this, maybe they did show up.
But if you are listening to this, and it is past the 20th, and it is actually playing sometime in June, that means Cambridge came to their senses and have allowed the first two equity indexed annuity shows to play, and those are playing. But if you haven't heard this yet, or if you're just hearing this and it's still sometime in May, Cambridge has not relented, and equity indexed annuities will have to go down as one of the seven dirty words we shall never talk about. The end result of all this, Chris, it's going to force me to leave Cambridge. I mean, it's as easy as that. And that's what I told them. It's hardly a threat. I'm not a huge company to them relative to the thousands of advisors that work with them. But the point of the matter is, when you hook your horse to a new cart, you're stuck to... when you hook your cart to a new horse, you're stuck to that horse. Mm-hmm. And when we hook ourselves to Cambridge, I got to follow their rules.
We're not going to beat that horse, are we?
I'm not going to beat that horse to death, no. But what I will do is leave. Because what I simply have to do is take my registered investment advisory firm, Jim Solly & Associates, change the wording of my ADV, cross a couple more T's, dot a few more I's, and become a full-service registered investment advisor. And then we can talk about equity indexed annuities, because I'm not going to have that stupid rule. Cambridge
can
admits.
Can we talk about those special mortgages?
We can talk about those special mortgages, right? Our opinions have reversed on those mortgages, and we now would like to teach people about them. But again, Cambridge rule is don't say anything about them. Stick your head in the sand about those mortgages and stick your head in the sand about those annuities. We don't want you talking about them. Now, you can sell them. Go out and sell all those annuities you want, Jim. Just don't talk about them. That makes no sense to me. So, and if I can't get a straight answer, chances are I will just leave Cambridge is what I will end up having to do. Junior is excited about that, Justin. He wants out. But I still like the fact that one company, and they do a lot, except for this, I really do like their firm culture. They have they're from Iowa. They have that Midwest ethics. They have that hard work mentality. They do a wonderful job. They really help me. I don't have to do so much. I don't have to worry about my SEC filings. I don't have to worry about the registration, the reporting, all that. I mean, they just take care of all of that, Chris. It's really good. But if they're going to impede me from talking about things I want to talk about, I can't stay there. I just can't do it. And eventually we'll leave and move on. Okay, but one annuity we can talk about.
At least today. Under current rules.
And again, you might be wondering, well, why do they have all these rules? I don't know. But there's all different types of annuities. We talked about that on the banned shows. That I like to use annuities, the way I equate them, what is it? The analogy that I like to use is dogs. I like dogs. I just don't like all dogs. Well, I like annuities. I just don't like all annuities. But the word dog, when you hear dog, Chris, they're not just one kind of dog. It's not just, oh, I'm going to go buy a dog and it's all the same. There's hundreds of different dogs you can get. Annuities are the same way, except there's not hundreds of them. But there are probably a good 8, maybe 10, I never really counted, different types of annuities. And within those different types, there's dozens of companies offering dozens of products. So if you multiply it all through, there's literally thousands of annuities you could get. But they all fall under about probably 8 to 10 main categories. And then within those categories are all the different offerings.
Mm-hmm.
So again, people, it's not that Chris and I love annuities or hate annuities. They're just a tool, just like a dog. I don't love all dogs. I don't hate all dogs. They're just a dog. And I really like some dogs, Chesapeake Bay Retrievers being one of them. And I don't like other dogs, Chows being one. And it's nothing against Chows.
And I think tool is the right word here because it's like saying I love jackhammers or I don't love jackhammers. It's not really a love thing. It's, gee, do I need a jackhammer? If so, let me go get a jackhammer. If I don't need a jackhammer, don't sell me a jackhammer.
Well, if you're looking to screw a nail, if you're looking to screw in a screw,
yeah,
you're not going to use a jackhammer. You're going to use a screwdriver.
Yeah.
I originally said if you're looking to screw a nail, you didn't pick up on that.
But then you immediately blurted out lots of other words to try to cover your tracks.
I fixed it is what I did.
I'm not sure fixed is the word, but
I got
you
to
covered it.
It
up.
I covered it up.
Yes.
Very good. But no, we look at annuities as just a tool. Mm-hmm. Just like a dog, you wouldn't use a chihuahua to go retrieve a goose, and you wouldn't use a Chesapeake Bay Retriever to be a lap dog. You kind of got that bass-ackwards. You use the chihuahua to be the lap dog and the Chessie to go get the goose from the cold Atlantic, which is what my Chessie used to do before he died.
Do you really have to get him out of the Atlantic? You keep saying that.
I grew up on the Atlantic coast.
Is that where they fell down, is in the Atlantic Ocean?
No, the dog didn't fall down.
The geese did.
Yeah, the ducks and the geese. Well, geese not so much over the
ocean.
You
shoot them over the ocean?
Sea ducks, yeah.
You kept saying geese. I'm picturing geese that are like...
Well, they're ducks and geese. Geese we shot more inland. We hunted them inland. Sea ducks...
That's what I'm picturing is that. I couldn't understand why they were flying over the ocean while you're sending your dog out into the ocean.
No. Mosby went into the Atlantic to get
sea ducks. That makes
sense. He went into the ponds,
cranberry
bogs. He went into the bogs to get the geese.
Are they deep enough where he had to swim?
Oh, yeah. The retaining ponds to feed the bogs. The bog owners wouldn't let you go into the bogs. No,
let the dog run around in the cranberries.
The retaining ponds they flooded the bogs. You couldn't go near the bogs. If you got permission to hunt and you were found on the bogs, forget it. You wouldn't be able to hunt anymore.
You could pre-marinate your goose in cranberries.
Let's go stuff the goose with these air cranberries. But anyways, what we're talking about is an annuity is just a tool. So we're going to talk about a new tool. We've talked about them in the past. We did get 2 emails. Both of them are not recent emails. They're both from some time ago that were not ignored. They were just put in the stack of stuff to talk about at some future date, and this would be said date.
We're here. We've arrived.
We're done. So when I get a hold of these people and let them know we're answering it, they're going to be, wow.
I wouldn't bother mentioning it.
No? You wouldn't reach out to them?
Well, you've already talked to them at other times about other things, so they probably think it's weird that you're now calling them about something that happened a while
last year.
Well, I wasn't going to really spell it out, but...
Well, the year's not that far ago. It's only
halfway
May.
Through, pretty much. Pretty close.
So it gives you an idea how long we've had these emails. Okay, so it begins. Hi, Jim and Chris. Thanks for your help with a few Social Security questions. I now have questions on an annuity. Mm-hmm. My wife and I are both 54. He's probably 55 by now, or maybe 60. Yeah. My wife and I
easy.
Are both 54 years old and hope to retire at 62. I have a pension from my employer and intend to delay taking that pension and my Social Security until my full retirement age of 67. We have a 403B and a 401A pre-tax account. This is telling me pension, 403B, 401A, Chris, probably a government worker, probably in some sort of university setting. But we have a 403B, 401A pre-tax account of approximately $600,000 and after-tax Roth investments and savings accounts of another $500,000. Our projections are to grow those balances combined to $2 million by age 62. Okay, then he writes this, Chris. It's pretty good. He says, when I compare the amount of income we could generate using the 4% rule, a rule which, by the way, I'm not a huge fan of, and a rule that has been reduced to the 3% rule. I do want to point that out to our listener. When I compare the amount of income we could generate using the 4% rule versus purchasing an annuity, and he is talking about a single premium immediate annuity, it appears the single premium immediate annuity provides a higher monthly income and essentially eliminates our longevity risk. And he put in parentheses, in case we didn't know what he meant, running out of money. Mm-hmm. But we knew what he meant.
Yep.
My initial thought is that I would like to apportion. Ooh, that's a good word. We've never used that word before. My initial thought is that I would like to apportion some of our assets into these annuities and leave the remainder in investments to provide part of our monthly income growth and access for large lump sum purchases or emergencies. Mm-hmm. What I just said there, what he just wrote, that is brilliant. That is exactly what we do. That is what a good retirement plan would do. He's trying to put in a plan for longevity risk. Now, he does have a pension. He doesn't say how much his pension is. That's also longevity protection. Mm-hmm. Because if he took the joint and survivor pension payout, no matter how long he and his wife lived, that pension needs to continue paying. I'm guessing, because he's done a lot of analysis, I'm guessing the pension alone with Social Security is not enough income to cover whatever needs he feels he wants to make sure he can cover for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. So he's looking at, what else do I have to do to generate income? But the way he wrote that, he doesn't want to put all his money in annuities. That would be stupid. But he feels some should go in, because it's going to provide more income than he can generate on his own, and an implicit warranty that if he lives long enough and hasn't died and received all his money, the annuity company has to keep paying him. Mm-hmm. And he likes that. So what he's talking about doing, I so far give him two thumbs up. Then he writes in another paragraph, assuming we can fill our income needs through these varieties and combinations. I guess he's talking about all the different income streams he has. What are the considerations and trade-offs? What is the best way to start researching an annuity company? What resources are available? What key terms and features are the most important for us to evaluate? At our age, should we be putting money today into deferred annuities? And then he says, would it make sense to use QLACs with our pre-tax retirement accounts? I know these are specific questions to my situation, but I was hoping if you could maybe address them as part of a broader podcast episode all about these annuities. I got good news for him. We're probably going to end up doing this over this show. Whew. God. And another show. I don't think I'll get this. Because he asks a lot of questions here.
He does.
Here. And,
it's the type of questions you want to ask, though, to understand these before
absolutely,
purchasing.
Absolutely. And then the other email, I'll hold it up, much smaller. You can see that one, much smaller. So this one came in even before this email. So, wow, long time ago this one came in. It begins, Jim and Chris, love your show. I am an iTunian. I've been scratching my head about this topic and wondering if you have ever covered it at length on past shows. Single premium immediate annuities. And then he put in parentheses, all caps. This must have came in around our QLAC show. He put in parentheses, not QLACs, exclamation point. we did three shows on qualified longevity annuity contracts. I actually like QLACs. They're a good little product.
I like them too, but it's kind of like an ice cream, but then you just eat so much of it, you get sick of it.
Well, we did that show over a year ago, I think, or almost
it's
a year
still
ago.
It still lingers.
It still lingers. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I have not found a source to answer the following questions on single premium immediate annuities. How much do they cost? What is a reasonable yearly fee? How do you find a reputable company? Very similar question to what the other gentleman asked.
Reputable
company. Oh, now reputable. R-E-P-U-T-A-B-L-E, reputable. Why are you looking at me that way?
I've not heard it pronounced like that. I could, that maybe that's another acceptable pronunciation, but reputable is usually how I hear it.
Reputable.
Reputable.
Reputable. Yeah, that's in there too. Reputable.
It's about their reputation. Reputable. But I'm going to look it up
reputable?
And see if reputable is actually a word. You got the spelling
right. I was on a roll, man. Okay, how do you find a...
Well, listeners rely upon me...
To correct me?
To bring these things to everyone's attention.
When I make a slight pronunciation error?
Reputable is slight.
I bet you're
it's
reputable.
Changing the whole essence of the question, but...
All right.
Or the word.
How do you find a reputable, apparently? How do you find a reputable company to purchase them from so I don't get sold a bill of goods? And what assurances are there that the company I purchased them from will be around in 30 years? These are all good questions, listeners, that people should be evaluating if they're going to consider a single premium immediate annuity. So we're going to explain a little bit about what these annuities are, how they work, and answer all these really good questions from both these emailers. And that will probably take me two shows. Chris is diligently over there trying to look if
reputable.
How about reputable?
Reputable.
Reputable.
That was British English, but American English is
reputable.
Not reputable. I'm just giving you what Cambridge says.
That's from Cambridge?
Cambridge Dictionary. Not,
oh,
not the RIA.
I thought the Cambridge I just threw under the bus.
No, this is a different Cambridge.
So it's reputable.
No, it's reputable.
Reputable.
It's like reputation. It's not reputation.
But you got to admit.
How's his reputation?
It's spelled reputable.
And reputation is spelled reputation, but we pronounce it reputation.
So I have an issue with some words.
I didn't know 100% for sure. I just never heard reputable, so that was going to be news that we should have shared with our audience if that was an acceptable pronunciation. It appears not to be. But if it were, people would have been thankful and they could have, at a party, used the alternative pronunciation, reputable. Because it does sound a little more highbrow.
It does?
Yes.
Okay. Are you done?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. How much time do I have?
Minute and a half.
It's not much. Okay. So what we're going to talk about is a different type of annuity called a single premium immediate annuity. This has to be the purest of all annuities. Because just like I said, there's hundreds of different types of dogs. There's probably about 8 to 10 different types of annuities. But within each type, there's got to be dozens and dozens
and
dozens.
So this is the wolf of the annuity.
No,
everything
because wolf has a connotation of being mean and terrible.
No. I'm not talking about personality
this
here.
This is
we're
pure
about,
as the driven snow.
Yeah, pure dog is They all came from bread. Wolves.
This is a pure. This
all
is,
dogs came from the wolf.
It's the simplest type of annuity you can get. It's the purest, simplest, easiest to understand.
So it's like a simpleton? That would probably be a golden retriever then.
Yeah, golden retrievers. I don't know. I don't know if I want to call it a golden retriever. But it is a very...
I have two, and they're very simpleton-like. Kind of dopey.
It is...
Hello.
It is a very simple annuity. It's the purest annuity, but it can be a very powerful annuity if used correctly. I will admit it is probably the least used of all annuities, but it is the simplest of all.
Hmm. Nice. So when we come back from this break, we are going to hear, let's see, a tribute song, actually, for music legends of a bygone era written and performed by a Motown singer first signed at the age of 11. Signed very young. So we'll find out who that is and what song that is after we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. And it's, of course, Stevie Wonder singing Sir Duke. It was true that Stevie was first signed by Motown when he was 11, released his first songs at the age of 12. That's shocking. Do you watch The Voice?
Negative. Yeah.
Had a couple of people on there this year, 15 years old. Amazing how good they are at 15 years old. I'm not sure what they're feeding these kids or where they find these people, but it's an abnormal level of talent. It explains where some of the talent of our we mere mortals that don't have it all gets concentrated in a very few select individuals because it's mind-blowing. But anyway.
And why do we do these songs? Why don't you explain?
Because
you
we
listen
like
to
them?
Well, it's gone beyond that.
I guess. So each one of these has some kind of strange connection to Social Security, believe it or not. You might wonder, how does Stevie Wonder have some sort of connection to Social Security? Well, follow me. Stevie Wonder, this hit number one this week back in 1977. That was 40 years ago. The reference to 40 years appears in the Social Security rules and regulations where the Social Security uses a figure called 40 elapsed years to describe a person's, what they consider to be a standard career, 40 years from technically in their eyes, when you look at the notes that were made during the negotiation process, they decided that from age 22 to 62 sounded like a nice career. And that's 40 years. So they kind of start when they start writing down your information to ultimately connect you to a retirement benefit. They start with this concept of 40 elapsed years. Now, they don't use 40 years worth of earnings records in order to determine your retirement benefit. That connection is going to come up after the next break when we come back from the last break in the show and play the number one song from this week 35 years ago. Because they actually take your 40 elapsed years, subtract 5, essentially saying we're going to throw out your 5 worst years in case you took time off or having a baby or you were out of work for a while or went back to school or did something during those 40 years, we're gonna give you a pass on five of those and only take a look at your 35 best years, what we call the 35 computational years. And that's what actually then goes into the formula to consider to calculate your average indexed monthly earnings, your AIME, which we pronounce AIME. And from that figure, they apply another formula to get to your PIA, your primary insurance amount, which, of course, we all know, having been part of this show, if you've been with us for a while, realize that your PIA represents your full retirement age retirement benefit, that monthly benefit to which you're entitled when you reach your full retirement age and you apply for benefits. So that's how all this connects and how we've got this kind of musical tribute to strange parts of Social Security, or maybe not strange parts, but the details of your Social Security benefit.
Excellent.
How was that?
I like it. And we're not going to have an update, though, are we?
We might. We might not.
Well, we don't know when this show is going to play. No, that's the problem.
We might have an update. Might be accurate. Might be not. Well, just know we have a blog called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. Separate from this, if you're listening to us on the website, jimhelps.com, which is the main website, but also links to our theretirementandiraShow.com, which is the home for our radio show here and podcast. But then we have a third site, if you will, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, where we focus not on all retirement topics, but instead on Social Security specifically, thus the title, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So that is your resource for all types of information about Social Security, the different benefits to which you might be eligible and to receive. And then you can find out some of the rules and regulations and strategies and answers. We answer listener questions and that type of thing, but all Social Security focused.
Gotcha.
So we don't need to do an update. Just go there and you'll find some stuff to read.
Right. And the reason we may not do the update, folks, if you listen to the first part of this show, is we don't know when this show is exactly going to play because we don't know if the previous shows are going to be allowed or not. So that's everything going on with that regard. So back to single premium median annuities. Let's begin by explaining what they are and what they're not so people can get an understanding of them. When I said that they were the simplest, purest form of annuity, they are essentially in what an annuity was originally created for. Legend or lore, I guess you could say, has annuities tracing their origin, Chris, all the way back to Roman times when they were called an annua. I believe it was annua or annuum. I think it was annua. They were called an annua, and essentially it was not offered by insurance companies. They didn't have insurance companies in Roman times. But rich aristocrats would pay people a stipend for the rest of their life in exchange for receiving, Chris, a lump sum of money up front. So someone would go to one of these aristocrats, give them a lump sum of money in Roman times, and that aristocrat would agree to pay them a certain amount of money for the rest of their life, no matter how long they live. Now, I used to joke with people that this is Roman times, and I used to watch that series called Rome on HBO. People didn't live very long. Maybe it was just the series, but it seems knives were always flying around somewhere, swords and knives, usually landing in backs after walking down an aisle in the street. And people didn't live very long back then. So I wonder if the aristocrats had the people bumped off, if they lived so long that the aristocrat was about to dip into their own money to pay the people and not just giving them back some of their own money. And you're diligently looking at something over there. You all set?
Yeah, actually, the Roman soldiers were paid
an annuity for serving
as a form of compensation for their military service back then and really up to 1952 when the first variable annuity was introduced. The only annuity structure available was single premium immediate annuities or SPIAs.
Correct. So we're going to get to a lot of that because annuities that we know today actually evolved, Chris, a lot during medieval times. And original annuities, one of the leading minds on annuity is Marsh Milvilsky or something like that. He's a Canadian professor. He wrote a book called Pensionize My Retirement, and it was written for Canadians. I wish he wrote one for the United States. And he talked about how to use annuities to pensionize. He created that term, pensionize. And I think if people hear the word pensionize, it sounds better than annuitize, because everybody loves pensions. Pensions is where the company gives you money for the rest of your life in exchange for labor. You worked for them, and then after 30 years or whatever it was, they would give you income for the rest of your life.
Well, he's kind of twisted that here in the office. We created our own term. We haven't used it for a long time because we haven't talked about SPIAs, but we talk about taking some portion of their retirement savings and SPIAtizing it. Yeah. We SPIAtize it, which is the verb version of SPIA, right? We're going to SPIAtize.
That's what we call it, yes, SPIAtize. Okay, so what happened is during not colonial times, but medieval times, annuities had evolved, Chris, where according to Marsh in one of the books he wrote about the history of annuities, that annuities weren't paying money during medieval times. Instead, and he was advocating to a return to this. And what you would get was a good or a service for the rest of your life in exchange for a lump sum of money. And he talked about how monks in medieval times, the villages were always built around the monasteries, or were the monasteries built around the villages? I don't know. But the villagers would go to the monastery, pay them money up front, and the monks would supply them with goods and services for the rest of the villagers' life. Now, of course, there was an endless supply of monks because there's always new monks coming in and other monks died. And he explained how they would deliver fruit from their fruit trees, maybe do repairs on their thatch roofs in medieval times. And in exchange for money, the monks provided goods and services. Marsh was taking this to a level where he was saying that retirees should be allowed to prepay for their electricity, prepay for their gas, prepay for other services. You pay and then you'll get those services for the rest of your life. And he was given the pros and cons of those. He also pointed out in America, there is currently in a tradition, that's a traditional annuity, he called it. He said in colonial times, and then of course into modern times, they started evolving into the payment of money. And that the first annuity ever written for the payment of money came in England. And it was some politician who got it from the city he was representing. So at some point in time between Rome and medieval times, they kind of went away. And then the monks were bringing them back, but for goods and services. I want to give you a little test, see if you can guess, because I didn't get it. I had to read Marsh's writing to get the answer. He said, there is in America today a traditional medieval-style annuity that every American has probably purchased. Can you think of it? Where you, in exchange...
A good or service?
Exchange for money, you will get a good or service. And I think he is right. Every American, short of some newborn kid or some 10-year-old, but I think anybody 15 and over has purchased this annuity. Do, 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 do.
Medicare Part A?
A 15-year-old?
Mm.
Not a true annuity.
Why? You get services for the rest of your life.
You don't get a service, you get the government paying for health care. It's a little different. There is an entity in the United States that you have given money to, and that entity will promise you a good or a service for the rest of your life.
Mickey Mouse Club?
No.
I have what?
The U.S. Postal Service's Forever Stamp. No matter when you buy it, they will promise you the delivery of 1 ounce of first-class mail, no matter how long you live and no matter what the price rises to. And that's why Marsh liked them, because it's a predetermined set delivery of a good or a service. A bushel of apples in medieval times, the delivery of a piece of mail. That is an annuity.
I discovered why they sell those, too, is the number of people who lose stamps.
Yeah, probably.
They factor that in. They must, because I was just cleaning out my garage the other day. I found a book of stamps from some Forever stamps, luckily. Not a whole book. I'd used some of them, but the rest of the book.
And they're still good.
I remember years ago looking for this book of stamps, never finding it, and I just found it this weekend.
But that highlights it. Mm-hmm. Years later, the U.S. Postal Service is promising to deliver that good a service that you pre-purchased.
Even better, it's not just for your lifetime. It's as long as that stamp is out there.
Exactly. So think about this, people. SPIAs, single premium immediate annuities. We call them SPIAs because the acronym SPIA spells the word SPIA. So single premium immediate annuities are very similar to what the U.S. Postal Service is doing. Except the U.S. Postal Service, in exchange, I don't even know what it is today, what, 48, 47, 49? I don't know what it is. But in exchange for whatever a stamp costs, they promise to deliver 1 ounce of first-class mail at any point in the future, assuming they're still around. So that is, historically, an annuity. It's only in colonial times that annuity payment switched, Chris, from goods and services to actual money. And then money was exchanged and money was paid in exchange for the lump sum payment of a certain amount of money. In other words, back to the stamp analogy, let's just say it's 47 cents. I don't know what it is. You give the insurance company a lump sum of money, 47 cents, and they promise to deliver a 1 ounce first class letter for you. Well, an annuity today, a single premium immediate annuity today, folks, is essentially the same thing. It's where you take a much bigger lump sum. You can't buy an income annuity for 47 cents, but you take a much bigger lump sum payment, $50,000, $60,000, $10,000, $100,000, whatever. You can put, pretty much you could put anything above $5,000 into one of these, and they'll take it up to $1 million. So you put in a lump sum of money, Chris, and in exchange, you don't get a good a service. You get a set amount of money for the rest of your life. You then take that money, as Mosh said, and go out and buy the goods and services. But that exposes you to the risk of inflation on the good or service. He liked the medieval way where if you purchased a bushel of apples for the rest of your life, or in today's day and age, maybe, you know, a quarter of a side of a beef for the rest of your life with this lump sum of money, the issuer, the beef person, he or she is taking the risk of inflation and cost increases and natural disasters, not you. They have to provide the beef to you. So he tended to favor the old ones. I think it's totally impractical. You're not going to see that, really.
Plus, there's downsides to that. What if your tastes change and you don't want beef anymore, you want chicken?
Right.
What if they decide that, you know, cows decide to, not cows don't decide, but the cattle industry kind of fades away because consumers prefer something and now they're not even producing it and there's the struggle of getting it to you. Where if you give dollars, you can change over time. So there's definitely a downside to getting goods and services for the rest of your life versus dollars.
True, but as a retirement planner, I found his approach and his history quite interesting. Mm-hmm. So he just kind of laid it out and I thought, wow, I never knew that. So today, in exchange for a lump sum of money up front, you get a stipend, so to speak. You get a payment. That payment is guaranteed for the rest of your life. Even if you live long enough, Chris, that you get all your money back. And that's the key I want people to understand. And the first emailer addressed that. He said it dawned on him if he purchased an income annuity, he said essentially it eliminates longevity risk. And again, in parentheses, he put running out of money. So the insurance company can do that because, Chris, they put your lump sum of payment in a pool with hundreds, if not thousands or tens of thousands of other people in that pool. So all of that money is in the pool. They know some people will die sooner, some people will die later, and a few people, Chris, will live so long that, you know, they're going to tip the scale in the other direction and they're going to take more money than anybody. But there'll be fewer numbers of those. So by pooling the risk, we've talked about this before, risk pooling, insurance companies can pay more in an annuity payment than you could out of a withdrawal benefit, as this listener wrote in his original email. He was finding that the annuity quotes he was getting would pay him more money than using the 4% rule. Now, there's a lot of nuances there that I don't want to get into, because the 4% rule is now the 3% rule, but those payments are supposed to go up by inflation every year, whereas annuity payments are generally level unless you buy a COLA adjustment. That's an additional cost. We'll talk about that on another show. But
And there's other trade-offs too.
True. So I'm just trying to set up the basics here. The best way to understand a SPIA, people, it is the mirror opposite. It is a complete 180. It is the don't laugh. I'm
trying to not. I'm sitting.
No,
here.
You were trying to laugh.
No, I'm trying to not react.
I got it right. It's
but
a
then
360.
You react to my it's struggle a, for reaction.
It's not a 360. It's a 180. It's half of that. It's a mirror opposite. The mirror opposite to a single premium immediate annuity is life insurance. That's why you see some of the biggest providers of single premium immediate annuities are life insurance companies. You don't see property casualty insurers being big pushers of this. The reason is the insurance company can hedge life insurance risk. If all what you sold was life insurance, you're exposed to what risk as an insurer? People dying too soon. People aren't going to live to life expectancy and they die too soon. And the money that you had hoped to grow to pay their death benefit, you have to give to them sooner. So the risk to insurers who sell life insurance is people dying too soon. So they hedge that risk with the sale of a single premium immediate annuity, whose biggest risk to them, Chris, isn't people dying too soon. That's good. It's people living too long. Where that's not a risk for life insurance, people living too long, that's wonderful. So the two of them actually hedge each other out. And it's a wonderful way for life insurers to hedge their life insurance risk. So they love offering single premium immediate annuities because they can hedge life insurance risk with it. But the reason I say it's a mirror opposite is this. When you buy life insurance, this is what you do. You agree to give the insurance company a certain amount of money every year, correct?
Correct.
And at your death, your beneficiaries get what?
A lump sum payout.
A massive lump sum payout. A single premium immediate annuity, folks, is the mirror opposite. You give the insurance company a lump sum payout or a lump sum dollar amount. And what do they give you? A little bit of money for the rest of your life. It's the mirror opposite of life insurance. So it's a wonderful way for life insurance companies to hedge, but it's a wonderful way for you listeners to protect from what risk? The risk, Chris, the first listener wrote. Mm-hmm. Longevity risk. Living too long. It's a wonderful way to hedge that. Because if you put in $100,000, I'm just making that number up. It could be $10,000, it could be $50,000, it could be $100,000, it could be $1,000,000. You put in a certain amount of money, the insurance company is going to agree to pay you a certain amount every single year for the rest of your life. Simple math, you take that dollar amount and divide it by the amount of money you put in, and that's how long you have to live to get all your money back. If you think you can live past that, that means you have longevity. And if you think you're going to be able to live past that, if you're 55 or 60, or actually if you're 70 and you're still having Sunday dinner with your 95-year-old mother and the 105-year-old great-grandmother or grandmother, then you probably have longevity. If you have longevity, an annuity can be a single premium immediate annuity can be a wonderful thing. But Chris, what if your mother and father both died of heart failure in their 60s? Would you really want to buy a single premium median annuity?
I don't know. Probably not.
No.
Depends on my risk.
Well, you don't have longevity.
Well, you know, when it comes to an individual, you don't know.
We're talking individual. I'm not talking about a joint and survivor. I'm not getting into any of that.
This is where I disagree with you, because I say,
excuse me?
For an individual, if you're going to try to make a longevity guess, that's all you're doing. It's a guess.
I have a friend who's the males in his family have all died in their 60s, mm-hmm. and he has had to have special heart surgery to prevent him from falling victim to that. Mm-hmm.
Which they didn't have.
I would not necessarily recommend a single premium median annuity to him. I don't know if there's longevity there. I know where you're going with this. We've argued about this before.
I'd say holistically is how I would look at it. All the other parts to his plan, what are the resources he has, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Making a bet on, gee, I think I'm going to live longer, or, oh, gee, because of my parents, I think I'm going to live shorter. I think that's putting too much emphasis on that one variable, which you're just guessing.
It is just one variable. And it is a variable we have to take into consideration, but as you also pointed out, there's many other items you would look at when purchasing a single premium immediate annuity. All your other assets, your needs, your income, all that. And when we get into the weeds a little bit on these single premium immediate annuities, and I start explaining the different kinds and the different options to look for, that's where we can address a lot of those concerns. So in this segment, I just wanted to give a little bit of a history of annuities, get you to understand how they work. It's essentially the exchange of a lump sum of money up front, and in return, you get a steady stream of payments for the rest of your life, no matter how long you live. Even if you get all your money back, they have to keep paying you until you pass away.
Perfect. So when we come back from this last break on the show, we're going to hear not the number one song actually this week in 1982, but rather the number two song, because the number one song is still Ebony and Ivory, and that happens for a number of weeks. So we're going to play the number two song just to mix it up a little bit. This song warns us, quote, not to talk to strangers. So we'll find out what song that is right after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number two song back 35 years ago this week. That's Rick Springfield, of course. His biggest hit was Jesse's Girl, but this is his second biggest hit, Don't Talk to Strangers.
Haven't heard that song in a while.
35 years, maybe?
Yeah, about 35 years it's been.
I like Rick Springfield.
Only his two-hit wonder.
Two-hit wonder. He had the long stint on soap opera, and he's a talented guy.
He was on soap operas?
Yes.
You're acting like I would know this because I watch soap operas. I don't watch soap operas.
You didn't have to. I didn't watch them either, but you don't know anything about Rick Springfield?
Negative.
Oh, yeah. He was on one of them. One of the big ones.
One Life to Live?
One of those.
As the World Turns?
One of those. The Edge of Tomorrow or whatever. As the World Turns, I don't know, Bold and the Beautiful? They're all those.
I have no idea.
I don't remember. I'll look it up.
You don't have to.
No, I'm going to look it up while you're chatting.
I figured you would. Well, welcome back, folks. Normally at this point, after this segment, we're giving you an update on what's new on Help With My Social Security. The reason we're not today is we don't really know when on iTunes this...
Here's a shock. He's Australian. I had no idea.
Okay.
But Sorry to interrupt. That was... I'm shaken to the core now.
Wow, because he has an Australian accent?
He doesn't,
You have
though.
A man crush on Rick Springfield.
I didn't know.
And
that
I can guarantee you, Rick
General
Springfield...
Hospital. He was on General Hospital.
General Hospital. Mm-hmm. That is not his real name.
No, it was Richard Lewis Springthorpe.
Yeah, I can see why he chose Springfield instead of Springthorpe.
I'd be okay with either one, but I'm still shocked he's Australian. I had no idea.
Rick Springthorpe? That name just wouldn't resonate. Yeah.
Okay, whatever. It's fine.
Okay. All righty. So the reason we don't have the update on what's new and help with my Social Security is we don't know when exactly this is going to play because of the whole issue we spoke about earlier with getting the previous two recorded shows on iTunes or not. So we felt the safest thing to do is not give the actual summary of the update on what's new and help with my Social Security. But that website, what's new... Excuse me, that website, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, was updated, correct, Chris? So there is a new update there. They just have to go read it. We just don't know which one they're going to see.
There's valuable information there one way or the other.
One way or another,
yes. The status of this show and the coordination with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com is unknown at this point.
It's questionable at this point.
The relationship between the two and the dates, it's unknown, but... But it's a repository of fine, fine information about Social Security. Well worth a trip if you haven't been there.
It is. Okay. So we left off giving a little history of single premium immediate annuities. Now we'll get into and how they work in exchange for a lump sum of money. Now I'll get into a little bit more depth on them to finish up this show. And then next week we're going to get into the taxation of these annuities, Chris. And then some strategies on how you would consider using them. And, of course, answer some of the questions the email listeners are having of how to research them, how to find one, how much do they cost, things of that nature. Okay. So back to some of the basics on single premium immediate annuities. So what you would do and Chris and I do agree, but we politely disagree. I feel if someone doesn't think they have the life expectancy, they don't necessarily need to consider one of these annuities. But if you want to play the odds and say, I don't really know how long I'm going to live, would you still need one of these? That's the key. I'm not certain, Chris, everybody needs one. We take the approach in our office that we like to cover what we call your minimum dignity floor. We've talked about that many times. That we believe a person's required expenses, those expenses that will last the rest of your life, and your failure to cover those expenses will cause you to suffer an economic, financial, and medical hardship. Those expenses, Chris, we believe vehemently should be covered by what we call secure income. Secure income is, first of all, predetermined and known, folks. There's no ambiguity. We can tell you at 65, 70, 75, 80 what you're going to be receiving. Number two, secure income is not impacted by changes in interest rates, movements in the stock market, or any external matter. If your secure income changes at all, it only goes up. And if it goes up, it's usually caused by a predetermined cost of living adjustment added to that income stream. And number three, secure income is not backed by just your assets per se. It's backed by a deep-pocketed third party. I just described Social Security, pension, and income annuity. One of the reasons we don't recommend income annuities often is we believe as a firm, only your required expenses need be covered with this secure income. And for most people, their Social Security, especially if they are married, Because when you're married, your required expenses, Chris, don't go up by 50% over single persons. Your required expenses go up about 30%. Doesn't cost you any more to heat or light the home if one people or two are in it. Now, technically, I know someone might burn a little bit more electricity, but I'm just saying, if you want to keep your house at 68 degrees in the summer and 70 in the winter, whether one person is in it or two, the fuel company is going to charge you the same to heat that house. You don't see... when you look at couples, you don't see this required expenses increasing by half just because there's two people there. So for most people, especially couples, their Social Security and maybe pension, if they're entitled to any, seems to cover their required expenses at least initially in retirement. Eventually, required expenses take up a bigger and bigger chunk of their income because of inflation on those required expenses. So what we often see is initially in retirement, 60-year-olds are covering their minimum dignity floor with Social Security and pension. But by time they get into their late 70s, early 80s, there's a crossover point, we call it, a point in time where because of the cost of living adjustments to their required expenses, the inflation adjustments to their required expenses and the cost of living adjustments to their income annuity, Social Security, or pension cross. And the required expenses start to take up a bigger and bigger chunk of their overall expenses. We believe required expenses are the expenses one must cover with secure income, not your desired expenses, the fun things in life, because you can cut the fun things whenever you want. But you cannot cut the required expenses. You cannot go to the city and say, I'm only going to pay 80% of my property taxes this year. I don't have the other 20%. But as soon as I get it, I will give it to you. You can't tell them that. You can lose your house. But you certainly could go to the travel agent and say, hey, I'm not going to go travel for 10 days this year. I got to cut my expenses by 20%. I'm only going to travel 8 days this year. The travel agent can easily do that. So we feel required expenses need to be covered with secure income. And because most people, Chris, early in retirement, their Social Security, especially if they had fairly decent earnings, their Social Security seems to cover their required expenses. We find later in life, their required expenses begin to exceed their secure income, and now they could benefit from the purchase of an annuity, perhaps, if they want to cover these expenses with lifetime guaranteed income. And the first emailer, one of his questions were, when should he buy one of these? My whole point with this tirade is you buy them, Chris, when you need them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're going to benefit from delaying the purchase of these basic SPIA form of annuity because of the late 70s, your life expectancy is actually not very long. So the insurance company is going to pay you more out on a monthly or annual basis per dollar that you put in compared to earlier because they know they're not going to be having to pay you for as long. So you get more bang for your buck, if you will. You also have, if we talk about today, interest rates do have an impact on what the promised payout is when you create the contract, which is the SPIA. Future interest rate changes don't change your benefits, but once you start them, the day you start them, interest rates play a part in what your agreement is between you and the insurance company. So especially today, we've been saying, don't buy it today if you really don't need it. If you need it in the future, hopefully not only will you benefit from having a shorter life expectancy, so the payouts will be larger, but hopefully interest rates will be higher at that point as well, kind of a double bonus, if you will. So technically, we've done that. There are times, though, when we know we've kind of identified a future need, and it can make some sense where people will buy a deferred kind of product But that's not really what we're talking about today. But that is also a possibility that in certain circumstances it can make some sense to buy one of these deferred products where the payments don't start immediately. A SPIA, the payments have to start within 1 year of you depositing the money, buying the contract itself.
Exactly. So one of the reasons I want to answer one of his questions is when should he consider buying them? He was only 54. Certainly obviously you're not going to buy a single premium immediate annuity. They have to begin paying out by month 13 after you opened it. So why would a 54-year-old buy it now? If they're going to have to pay him for the next 80 years, the payments would be a lot smaller.
Well, 30 years.
30 years. The payments would be a lot smaller, obviously, and he doesn't need it yet. You buy a SPIA when you need it. And one of the things to understand with single premium immediate annuities, folks, the older you are, the more you get. Chris just said that. So a 65-year-old gets less money than a 75-year-old putting the exact same dollar amount into them. Even though these are insurance products, they are not investments, folks. They are insurance products that promise to pay you a set amount of money no matter how long you live, even after getting all your money back. They're not an investment. There's no volatility. There's no variability in them. They're none of that. They are just an insurance product for longevity protection. But the older you are, the more you get, so there's no rush to buy them. And they're priced by the month. So a 70-and-a-half-year-old gets more money than a 70-year-old. An 80-year-old gets more money than a 70-and-a-half-year-old because they're 6 months older. So it's priced at the time you buy it based on current interest rates. Right now, current interest rates are pretty darn low. So we're loath to lock those interest rates in. Your payments are based on interest rates at the time of issue, not where insurance companies anticipate. This is where I'm trying to go with that. Not where they anticipate where interest rates are going to be in the future.
Right.
It's where interest rates are today. So we often tell people there's no rush to buying this annuity right now. Because we have clients, when they see that crossover point, Chris, and they know there's going to be a shortage, they say, what do I have to do now to get rid of that? They don't want to see it. They don't want to see that shortage in their retirement analysis. They want to make sure they can maintain that minimum dignity floor. And I tell them there's no rush. Instead, what we do is we tell them, how much money do you need to put away today at a certain rate of return? Let's do a return assumption. To be left with a lump sum of money that we think is going to be enough to purchase this annuity to get rid of that income shortage in the future. So rather than trying to sell them an immediate annuity now to take care of something that's going to arise in the future, we just tell them buy it in the future. There's no need to rush into this. But I wanted clients to get an understanding of that concept. The later you wait, the longer you wait, the older you are. And these insurance products are not underwritten, Chris. So they don't look at your health. You don't have to. It's not like life insurance or long-term care insurance.
Yeah, it would be the opposite. They actually want you to be sick when they sell you one of these things.
They would want you to be sick when you buy a single premium immediate annuity. They don't want you to be sick when you buy life insurance or long-term care insurance.
Right.
So those insurance policies, you need to buy them as soon as you can. Single premium immediate annuities, you don't buy as soon as you can. You wait till the very end. You just got to make sure the money for them is available. So we often counsel people on putting the certain amount of money aside. But again, in our practice, our philosophy, my belief is these annuities should be used to fund that minimum dignity floor Chris and I talk about a lot. They should not be used to fund every expense you may or may not have. I love to fish in Alaska. You know that. I don't need to buy a single premium immediate annuity to make sure I get enough money every year for the rest of my life to go fishing, because I can cut fishing. I'll only suffer an emotional loss That's what a desired expense is. The failure to cover a desired expense, you will suffer an emotional hardship. The failure to cover a required expense, you will suffer an economic, financial, or medical hardship. That's where we use single premium immediate annuities. And only after, Chris, first vetting and adjusting for Social Security and pension.
Right, and almost everybody has at least one of those. Occasionally, we've run into someone who has none of those, but that is pretty rare. Practically everyone has participated in the Social Security system, and if they didn't, they almost always have participated in some alternative retirement system that, in a lot of cases, actually has a higher payout on a monthly basis than what they would have gotten in Social Security if they would have stayed within Social Security. It's pretty rare for someone not to have either one, but it is possible because we have actually seen that on a couple of cases. And then you've got a real challenge. You've got to divvy up and decide how you're going to deploy just some lump sum and decide how much you're going to speatize or pensionize, which is some of the terms we've kind of kicked around today as we try to recreate or artificially create that lifetime payment stream to cover your most critical, what we term your desired expenses, or that minimum dignity floor that we discuss. So it's at least we've seen from client reactions that when we show them that their minimum dignity floor has been covered by reliable, what we call secure income, whether it be Social Security, pensions from their employer, or some type of annuity payment, the sense of relief or comfort that they've got knowing those are taken care of, and that yes, they want to do all these other things too, but they realize that if those things can't happen, it's not going to leave them destitute. It's just going to be, they may not be able to enjoy things quite enough, and they're okay with varying their degree of entertainment and travel and that sort of thing, depending on how their other assets may perform. So it's a good balance. It's not an all one, you know, all of something else. For most people, I think the most comfortable way, the most balanced approach is something similar to what we utilize here with that minimum dignity floor and then covering the rest, your entertainment expenses.
And that kind of answers, Chris, our first emailer's questions. And he wrote, where did he put it?
And I have heard some people that probably we'd throw these into the bucket of the absolute annuity lovers, where they say, why deal with any variability at all? Just put everything into annuities, and then you know exactly what you're going to get for the rest of your life. Well, there are some trade-offs. You don't have lump sums for certain things. You don't have maybe the possibility of growth happening.
And I want to get into those, Chris, in the next week's show. What this listener wrote, what are the considerations and trade-offs I should consider to determine the proper balance I should have in each account? What he was talking about there is how much money should be in an annuity, how much money should be in an investment. I think we addressed that with what we were saying and what I described as the minimum dignity floor. We personally believe this listener and others should evaluate and determine what expenses do they have to cover for the rest of their life, no matter how long they live. What expenses do they have little, if any, flexibility to cut? You've got to buy food. You've got to pay for utilities. You've got to pay income taxes. And what expenses do you have an ability to cut? Those are the desired expenses. For me, that would be the fishing or the travel or the hiking or whatever it is I want to do. I can cut those if I had to. We believe that a required expense should be covered with secure income. Before he or any listener buys an annuity, make sure they maximize or optimize Social Security for their particular marital situation or their particular life situation. Make sure they evaluate any pension that's available to them. Pension payments are often really good. We like pensions. And then they can evaluate an annuity. So I think the correct way to come up with the balance, there's no rule of thumb, Chris, that says you should have half your money in an income annuity and half your money in an investment. No one ever says that. You need to look at the expenses. And those expenses that are projected to occur for the rest of your life, no matter how long you live, those expenses should be covered with income from secure sources. Social Security pension and income annuity. So hopefully that answered that first question. He wanted to know what is the best way to start researching these. That was the same question we had from the other gentleman. He wrote, how do you find a reputable. I had it right the first time. How do you find a reputable company to purchase them from so I don't get sold a bill of goods? First of all, you won't find a company to buy them from. Insurance companies don't sell directly to the public. You always have to go through an intermediary with insurance for the most part. You might find some smaller insurance players. They might sell directly to you. But most of the larger players in this industry, in the single premium media industry or in the insurance industry in general, operate through intermediaries. Those intermediaries could be a simple website. We've used immediateannuities.com before. A gentleman named Mitch Hirsch in New York founded that firm. Or you can use an agent or otherwise known as a producer. They call insurance agents producers now. You can find a good insurance agent. Or you can work with someone like us. And you don't have to hire us. It's not why we're saying this. But we do offer an annuity service. You pay us for our time. We will help you research the companies, make a determination if you need an annuity. If so, how much? And then you can start doing your research that way. There's no one resource truly to help people determine, Chris, which is the best option for them. People either have to do it on their own or go through an intermediary. When you do online services, and there are several immediate annuities-like online services, you don't get the feedback that you're going to get from a human helping you. Another thing, whether you buy it through an online service, Chris, or a human, you'll get the exact same income. And I'm going to talk about that in the next show, that you're not penalized by working with a human. You're going to get the exact same amount of income whether you buy it online or through a human. So if you can find a good human, you may want to consider that because you have the ability to talk to them as opposed to typing into a web page.
Perfect. So that brings us to the end of another Retirement and IRA show. We'll be back next week with some more information on SPIAs, and we'll see where else this conversation may lead us. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.